Good morning and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a Vision for You Big Book study. My name is Melanie C. and I'm a recovered compulsive overeater calling in from Wilsonville, Oregon. Today is Wednesday, December 19th, 2018. This is the 10 a.m. Eastern Time Big Book study meeting. And today we are reading from the Big Book. We are in the placement of the foreword to the second edition on page XV. Paragraph 3 starts with the spark that was to flare into the first AA group. We're going to read that one single paragraph today and unpack that one with our study. Today's readers are the 12 Steps, Kathy R., the 12 Traditions, Marissa E., and reading the text and support today is Penny L.C., Leslie M., and Robin P. The share ID numbers for yesterday's 10 a.m. meeting is 12312, 12,312, and that would be for Tuesday, December 18th, 2018, 10 a.m. meeting. And then this morning's recorded meeting that's just happened, that would be for Wednesday, December 19th, 2018, 7 a.m. meeting is 12318, 12,318. The OA preamble. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. Our sole purpose. OA's fifth tradition states each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At a Vision for You Big Book study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. I will now ask Catherine R. to please read the 12 steps.
Good morning, everybody. This is Kathy R. in Chile, Florida. These are the 12 steps of our program. Number one, we admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. Eight, made a list of all persons who we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Nine, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. And number 12, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs. And thank you for letting me do this service.
Thank you very much, Kathy R. I will now ask Marissa E. to read the 12 traditions, please.
Good morning, Melanie. Good morning, family. This is Marissa E. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater outside Los Angeles. The 12 traditions. One, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. Two, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as He may express Himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. Three, the only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. 4. Each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. 5. Each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. 6. An OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7. Every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8. Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9. OA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10. Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11. Our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television, and other public media of communication. 12. Anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. And thank you for letting me do service.
Thank you very much, Marissa E. How our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature, then stop and share on what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and literature we are discussing, and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our abstinence requirement for moderators is 1 year, and for readers is 6 months. There is no abstinence requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We are sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, press star 1 to unmute, and once you're done sharing, let us know by saying pass. Then press star 1 to mute your phone. In order to have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone except the speaker should be muted, and this is would be by pressing star 1 rather than the mute on your own personal phone, please, in order to keep it from interfering with technology. Today, we resume our study in the Big Book. We're in the foreword to the second edition, page XV. At the bottom of the page, the third paragraph, the spark that was to flare into the first AA group. We're going to unpack that one single paragraph today, and it ends on page XVI with dependence upon God. And I will ask Penny LC to open us up today with that discussion by reading that paragraph and commenting on her experience with it. Hi, Penny.
Hi, Melanie. Thank you for your service, and good morning to you and everyone on the line. This is Penny LC, a grateful recovered compulsive overeater from the state of Washington, and this is the Big Book. The spark that was to flare into the first AA group was struck at Akron, Ohio in June 1935. During a talk between a New York stockbroker and an Akron physician, 6 months earlier, the broker had been relieved of his drink obsession by a sudden spiritual experience following a meeting with an alcoholic friend who had been in contact with the Oxford groups of that day. He had also been greatly helped by the late Dr. William D. Silkworth, a New York specialist in alcoholism, who is now accounted no less than a medical who is now accounted no less than a medical saint by AA members, and whose story of the early days of our society appears in the next pages. From this doctor, the broker had learned the grave nature of alcoholism. Though he could not accept all the tenets of the Oxford group, he was convinced of the need for moral inventory, confession of personality defects, restitution to those harmed, helpfulness to others, and the necessity of the belief and the dependence upon God. And as I look at this paragraph, I'm realizing this is a quick overview of the founding of AA and the 12-step way of life. And they refer to it as a spark. you know, a sign, an indication, a first flare that there was something coming, something developing here. And I appreciate how even in this wording, they don't highlight the individuals by name. Instead, they just give them a descriptor. Bill, the New York stockbroker, Dr. Bob, the Akron physician, and, you know, and then the friend that helped in during that meeting, Abby Thatcher. You know, it's not about the people. It's that humbleness that just says it's about the occurrence. It's about God creating this amazing program. And it goes on to talk about the process of how this all unfolded and how more will be revealed in the pages ahead. But from the doctor, the broker learned the grave nature of alcoholism. He learned of the obsession of the mind and the allergy of the body, and how it was not a matter of his weak will or his trying harder. It was just a disease. And then it goes on to talk about the Oxford groups. And that description there refers to page 263 in the back of the book, where it talks about the six steps of the Oxford group. Complete deflation was one. Two, dependence and guidance upon a higher power. Three, moral inventory. Five, confession. Four, confession. Five, restitution. And six, continued work with alcoholics. And if you look at those and drill down on those, you can see where within those six come the 12 steps. And in, same in this paragraph. Moral inventory, four. Confession, five. Personality defect, six, seven. Restitution of harm, the eight, nine. And a helpfulness to others in 12, and then dependence upon God pretty much fills the rest in. And we are so grateful, I think I am anyway, to have had this very beginning, this spark happen that would change these lives and eventually change my life. And with that, I'll pass.
Thank you very much, Penny LC. You just stepped in. We're on page XV. Forward to the second edition, third paragraph. It's open now for others to comment their experience on that paragraph.
Sunny S.
Hi, Sunny.
This is Robin P.
Hi, Robin P.
Gina R.
Gina.
John K.
E. John K. And Marissa E., did I hear you? Who is that? There?
Yes.
Marissa E., okay.
Cindy D.
Cindy D., let's go with that. That's my six that I'm looking for. Sunny S., Robin P., Gina R., John K., Marissa E., and Cindy D.
Donna
D. Now.
Oh, sorry.
Sunny, are you ready to go? And I'll catch you later, Donna.
Thank you.
Sunny, you're up. Star one.
Hi, this is Sunny S. Thank you for the opportunity to share. My name is spelled S-A-N-N-E, and I'm here in the mountains of Colorado. I really love this paragraph just because it inspires a lot of hope, you know, in the sense of, like, I just remember how lonely of a disease this was, you know, how many secrets I was keeping, including not only the hiding, but also, like, the harms that I would do, you know, because I would slip. You know, like my character defects would just slip and then I feel guilty. And then how do I cover that up to seem like a normal person while I'm still in the food? And just feeling like a complete alien, you know, not understanding what was happening. And then what I'm hearing, you know, is like the word help, you know, like this person helped this person. And, you know, throughout the years, help and help and help. And it's like, wow. You know, I was helped too. You know, I went into the rooms and I got a sponsor and she helped me. And then I talked to other fellow travelers and they helped me. And then I was able to help them, you know, and it's just like a interconnectedness that just comes from, well, I have this and you have it too. And we don't have to be alone in this anymore. And where it says, like, you know, we have to do a moral inventory and really be honest about what's happened. for me, that was a huge opportunity to break that shame. You know, like all those secrets that I was telling you about, I was able to just share them with another person. And if I was lucky enough, which I was, the person looked at me and said, yeah, I get it. I did that too. Or, you know, I did that in a different way, you know, but it didn't feel so shameful anymore. I could just walk through life without this huge baggage, without this huge secret, you know, of me being wrong, of me being a terrible person. And so with that, I'm incredibly grateful, you know, for a lot of things in this program, but if anything, for that, you know, like there's nothing wrong with me. I was sick. I am sick. And thanks to this recovery program, I don't need to be sick alone anymore. And I have, you know, recovery. I have some sort of healing to do and work to do on my, like, for myself. And with that, I pass. Thank you for the opportunity to share.
Thank you so much, Sunny. Robin P., you're up. Gina R. will be next.
Hi, this is Robin P. in Los Angeles, soon to be in Florida. Thank you very much. Thanks so much, Melanie, for your service. You know, I just really appreciate the way that this book is written. And, you know, it talks about that the broker had been relieved of his drink obsession by a sudden spiritual experience. I completely identify with that. And that this is a spiritual malady, you know, with needing a spiritual solution. And that mental obsession, I just, you know, the mental obsession, I never could fix, just like Einstein said, you know, I could never fix the problem with the same energy and at the same level as the problem itself, that I needed to go to a higher source. And through the people in this program. And, you know, as an inventor, in my life, I'm an inventor, it's a spark that flares into the first whatever it is. And I love that that's how that is. It's a spark. And that the broker learned of the grave nature of alcoholism, literally the grave nature, because it kills people. It's grave and it ends up in the grave, you know. And so he couldn't accept everything from Oxy. That's how things evolve, is being willing to take what's there and keep growing with it, to keep evolving. And that's just like my recovery. I just get to stay honest, open, and willing. That's how I recover. And I get to take what I'm learning today and then keep growing with it tomorrow. I must grow. I can never sit on my laurels. That's been very clear to me. And I think it's so great that they just sum it all up here with the confession, the need for the moral inventory, confession of personality defects, restitution to those harms, helpfulness to others, and the necessity in the belief and dependence upon God. There you have it. Thanks so much. I'm really grateful to be recovered today, more than words could ever say. Thanks so much, Melanie, for your service. And with that, I pass.
Absolutely. Thank you, Robin P. Gina R. John K. will come after you. Good morning, Gina.
Good morning, Mel, and everybody on the line. This is Gina R., gratefully recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. And I'm a compulsive eater living in Green Valley, Arizona. And what jumped out at me was the word spark, but God connected it for me in just a little bit of a different way. And that is with the phrase or the idiom that we hear on the lines, you know, that we've got to work this program like our hair is on fire. And I never really looked that up either. And so I did. And it says it's an odd phrase believed to have originated among Navy aviators, intended to convey a sense of hair-raising urgency. And so when I think of it that way, it makes sense. But for me, being a compulsive achiever and using food basically as a performance drug so that I could get all the stuff done that I thought I had to do, I would use hair-raising experiences to put the fire out, and I wouldn't understand that it was signaling something else. And so I'm seeing it a little bit differently this morning, and I'm going to have to meditate on it and contemplate it a little bit more. But what I think it's meaning for me today is when I have that sense of urgency that my hair is on fire with respect to the food, or now for me it's more with the emotions, that's simply a signal that there's something I need to pay attention to. And yes, it may be urgent. A lot of times it's not anymore. I used to blow things way out of proportion, and my reactivity was way more than what was actually needed or indicated. And so now the spark, it just tells me that, yeah, okay, something needs to be paid attention to. But instead of trying to put out the fire, now I am able to roll with whatever that emotional upheaval is and really let it be my teacher. And then I get to carry that spark and share it with somebody else. And so, yeah, I am working this thing like my hair is on fire, but I'm letting the fire do what it needs to do. We don't have to always put it out right away. We need to let it actually teach us. I don't know if that makes sense to anybody else, but that's what's resonating for me this morning. And I'm very grateful for the opportunity to share. And with that, I pass. Thank you.
Thank you, Gina R. John K., you're up, and Marissa E. will be next.
Thanks, Melanie. Good morning, everyone. This is John Kiernan, recovered compulsive overeater in Los Angeles. I just wanted to make a couple comments. I shared about this somewhere else this morning, that the big book drives me nuts, and I'll tell you why. They keep changing it. I don't know how or when. I think it's like big book elves that come in the middle of the night and throw in new sentences. You know, every time I read this, there's a new sentence that wasn't there the last time I read it. And I've been reading this book for 37 years, and it happens every time. I remember the last time through, there was something in Bill's story I'd never read. And this time, the thing that jumped out at me in this reading that I'm sure has been there all along, but it never clicked, is the thing that says, I'm not going to read the whole sentence because it's a huge run-on sentence, but though he could not accept all the tenets of the Oxford groups. And what hit me about that is, think about it. Here's Bill Wilson, the guy who starts it all, and even he doesn't buy into everything right away. And I think about how I was when I came to my first program, and I had all kinds of problems with the way the program was run and the things in the books and in the steps and in God and all this stuff. And what I got told by the guy who became my first sponsor is, don't worry about it. Leave it out. Just keep coming. Nobody's ever going to tell you that you have to believe anything. Nobody's going to tell you what to believe or how to believe it. Just keep coming. And the only other thing we ask is to just keep an open mind. Just keep an open mind to the idea that you may see things differently in the future. You may have some things that you think of now that you may change your mind on. And that, to me, is the big key. You know, and the way Bill set it up, I think Bill knew himself and he knew his personality. And his personality, I believe, from the things I read, is a lot like my personality. And in psychology, it's called an oppositional, defiant personality. And he knew that most people of that ilk then, and probably still, they didn't like being told what to do, you know. And that's the great thing about 12-step program. You know, it breaks from the old patterns all of us had, where people shook their finger in our face and said, here's what you got to do. And that this program doesn't do that. It says, hey, here's what we did. You want to do it? You can. If you don't, it's okay. And I just love that the program was set up that way. And I actually enjoy, one of the reasons I keep going through this big book is I want to see what new sentence the elves are going to put in it this time. So anyway, thanks for letting me share.
Thanks, John K. Marissa E., you're up. Cindy D. will be next.
Thank you. This is Marissa E., recovered compulsive overeater outside Los Angeles. Thank you, Melanie. If you guys hear something snoring, that's my dog. She's not entertained by the meeting. So I just want to hone in on, from this doctor, the broker had learned the grave nature of alcoholism. And I looked up grave, and it means giving cause for alarm, right? Serious, urgent, awful, terrible.
And for me, right, this morning, I feel like the grave nature of alcoholism is described on XXIX when it talks about after they have succumbed to the desire again, as so many do, and the phenomenon of craving develops, they pass through the well-known stages of spree, emerging remorseful with a firm resolution not to drink again. And this is repeated over and over. And unless this person can experience an entire psychic change, there's very little hope of his recovery. Right? And you know, I feel like these words right now, they're sticking out to me about the grave nature, right? And about being sick and afflicted. And I did not know for 10 years, right? I was going to OA meetings. I was working some kind of program. I was losing weight here and there, but going up and down because I didn't know that I was chained to a hamster wheel. I had no idea that I was chained to a hamster wheel and I was running myself into the ground. And you know, now just reading about this and just seeing those words, right, I can really see how, no, like there, this is grave. This is serious. And I remember I'd be like, oh, it was a little binge. It was a cute little binge. Or, oh, I put on a couple pounds. And I would go to meetings, right? And people would really just say the same thing. And I'm so grateful I came to Vision and, you know, stuck my nose in this book. And it was like, no, like, I am going to die of this disease. And I'm walking around already dead, right? I'm part of the living dead. And I'm just grateful that I can see that now, that I can admit it now, that I see the grave nature and that I have the desperation and the willingness to treat it, right? There is treatment and it's right here at the end of the paragraph. Moral inventory, confession, restitution, and, you know, helpfulness to others and a belief in God. And so, yeah, I'm just really grateful for the diagnosis and the treatment. And with that, I'll pass. Thank you.
Thank you, Marissa E. Just before we call up Cindy D., I'd like to let you all know that we are in the foreword to the second edition in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We are on page XV, studying today one single paragraph, which is paragraph 3, that starts with a spark that was to flare into the first AA group and ends with dependence upon God. Cindy D., hello there. It is your turn to comment on that paragraph, and then I'll open it up for some more shares.
Thank you. Good morning, Melanie, and all my fellow travelers. I keyed in on a lot of the same things as others have shared, and I'm so appreciative of hearing everyone. You know, for me, when I came back to OA, I had a spark in me that led me to come back, but it wasn't really until I started hearing what I considered, you know, a flare and a fire within those fellows that had gone before me and that were recovered, that, you know, I started getting that flare myself. And I did get that, you know, hair on fire reaction. But for me, it came once I started working the steps. And I so appreciate the fellow that shared the definition of that phrase. But, you know, I look at this as in that program as a continuous loop. Whether it's the loop of, you know, one spark leading to another flare, which then leads to another spark and another flare with another fellow, or, you know, just the steps themselves. I get reminded infrequently lately of the need for continuous moral inventory and continuous confession of my character defects and continuous restitution to those I've harmed. Continually needing to be helpful to others. And I think most importantly for me, the continuous need to believe in and to depend upon God and to turn it all over to God every single day. Because if I don't do that, then I'm right back in the grave nature of my disease, of compulsive overeating. And it's only through, you know, getting over my fears of sharing my true self and all of my character defects and all of my personality defects that I really get to learn and grow and experience the promises of this program. And it's so worth it. Easy? No. Sometimes it's difficult, but it's simple and it's practical and it really does work. I believe I'm an example, a miracle of this program. And I'm so grateful for the opportunity to work with others and to see and experience that spark and flare in other people as well. And thanks again for letting me share, Melanie, and I pass.
Thank you very much. Cindy D., I'm going to open up now for others to comment on that paragraph. I have Donna first, if you're still there, and who would like to come after Donna?
J.R.
Beatrice O.
Karen, I heard several people. Hang on just a second. Let's do this again, okay, please? Hang on just a second. Let's do this one more time. I want to make sure I got them in order. There was a three or four that came in first, and I don't want to miss your names. If you know that you were first, would you please? Carrie K.
Jodina.
Lisa J.R.
Beatrice
O. J.R. Somebody. Okay, Beatrice.
Mia.
Bonnie G.
I got Mia S.
Bonnie G.
Bonnie G.
Lynn S.
And that would be it. I'm not sure I can even get to the last one, but we'll see how things go with terms of time. Donna, are you still there?
Yes, I'm here.
Great. Hi, Donna B., and then Carrie K., Lisa J.R., Beatrice O., Mia, Bonnie G., and then Lynn S. Okay, thanks so much, Donna. Your turn.
Hi, this is Donna B., recovered compulsive overeater and bulimic, calling in from Denver, Colorado. Thank you all for your service this morning. I'm really inspired that Dr. William Silkworth is now accounted no less than a medical saint by the AA members, and whose story of early days of our society appears in the next pages. I do not aspire to be a saint, but it's amazing to me that by working with others and carrying the message, that I really have a new purpose for living, that in my very small way, by working with one person at a time, that I have the opportunity to create meaning for my life. There's a line in the Big Book that says, working with others or working with newcomers, I'm paraphrasing, will be the bright spot of our lives. And for me, I've spent many, many, many years when caught, trapped in the disease of compulsive overeating, my only purpose for living was to somehow manage the food, manage the weight, manage the perception that others had of me, to manage the outcomes of the overwhelming problems in my life. None of these things would help me to feel purposeful or useful or meaningful. It was so clearly a disease of consumption, being consumed by all of the fear and obsession in my life. And now that I have the opportunity to carry the message and to work with others and to feel that, it's just this amazing connection. There really is a spark that flares between me and one person. That's all it takes, is one other person opening the book, talking together about the program of recovery and the steps. And in my tiny, tiny, tiny little way, not a worldly saint, but maybe a saint in my little house, I feel that I'm doing God's work, that I'm doing something important, something meaningful. Thank you for letting me share. With that, I pass.
Thank you, Donna B. Carrie K., you're up. Lisa J.R. will be next. Star 1, Carrie K.
I'm sorry, I don't know why that technology evades me so often. Good morning. This is Carrie Kay, a compulsive overeater from Boulder, Colorado. And as often happens to me, when I hear the reading, I don't feel the urge to share, but sometimes when I hear other people's shares, it lights this light bulb up. And as a fellow Coloradan mentioned earlier, what a lonely disease this is. And I just wonder how amazing it must have been for the stockbroker and the physician to meet each other and realize that they were not alone and that there were others like them. And I am struggling to come back from a relapse. And what a lonely place it is in my life to be in relapse, because I feel bad about myself and my self-esteem is at a zero, and I seem to be all alone in this kind of dark place. And the only thing that seems to bring me comfort is, sadly, the food. And I'm really working to get out of that dark place and trying to be really willing to listen and be open to my higher power, because as I know, my way isn't going to do it. It hasn't done it, and it never will. But, you know, I don't want to see people. Somebody wanted to do a FaceTime call the other day, and I was like, no way, because how could I possibly let them see me in the state I'm in? And it's just a lonely place, and your disease says, that's okay, you can rely on me. I'll always be there for you. Well, that's kind of like the devil sitting on one shoulder, and unfortunately for me, nothing sitting on the other shoulder. And so I need to remind myself it's not that dark, lonely place that I want to have as my life, but it's that bright and happy and confident place that I can be when I'm not in the control of my disease and when I'm willing and open to my higher power and somebody else's way, because I don't want to live like this. And with that, I pass.
Thank you, Carrie Kay. Lisa J.R., you're up. Beatrice O. will be next.
Good morning, Melanie, and thank you for your service. And good morning, everyone. Lisa J.R. from Baltimore, Maryland. Gratefully recovered by God's grace one day at a time. Well, I can't get past that first sentence, you know. The spark that was to flare into the first AA group. You know, it's amazing. A spark can do a lot of things. It can be destructive, and it can be helpful, and it can be a motivator. We all saw what a spark did to Los Angeles recently with the fires and to the Columbia River Gorge area, a spark from a sparkler, what it did to burn down one of the most beautiful places on earth. Well, you know, I also know that my tongue can cause sparks. You know, it's a fire, and it sets the course of my life sometimes. You know, I open my mouth, and I use that for cynicism, judgment, or character assassination, and all those other awful defects that I was so deeply entrenched in before I came into program and worked through this program doing the 12 steps. You know, I was a wrecking ball, a weed whacker. You know, not only did I knock down the weeds, but I knocked the flowers down in the process of it. And so now I can use that spark between, just like a talk between a stockbroker and a physician, you know, not even mentioning their names there. It's just a talk. We just share our experience, strength, and hope, and hopefully, you know, maybe ignite something in another person that's suffering from this illness. And so I'll make it short. Grateful to be here. With that, I'll pass.
Thank you so much. Appreciate that, Lisa J.R. Beatrice, you're up. And then Mia S. will be next. Hi, Beatrice.
Good, mor- Good morning. This is Beatrice O. Can you hear me?
Sure can.
Okay, great. So I guess that spark for me was being over 200 pounds and growing out of the biggest stretchy pants I have. That was the spark, and looking in the mirror with disgust. And I think the biggest thing that struck me from this paragraph is at the end. It says the necessity of belief in a dependence upon God. And I think the biggest gift that God has given us is free will. We have a choice. God's not a codependent. He's not going to ask us to believe in him or her or whatever it is. And, you know, we gave God a last name in this program, as you understand him. So not only do we have free will, we can choose who our God is, but we need a power greater than ourselves. And I feel that without God, I couldn't be abstinent. You know, I've been looking for that sudden spiritual experience, and my experience has been of the educational variety. But I know that I have God. I could feel God within me now. I was at a meeting on Monday, and the woman was sharing, and she said she felt this big vacuum hole inside herself, and she couldn't stop eating. And she wanted the definition be of lonely versus loneliness. And as I was listening to her speak, and of course I couldn't comment on what she was saying, but I was thinking of that big God hole that I have, or that I had within myself. There is nothing on this planet that could ever fill it. There isn't enough food, enough money, enough of anything. And it's like I have the disease of more of this and more of that, and, you know, waiting for something to make me happy. And I know that living without a higher power guiding my life and being restored to sanity is the only way that, number one, I can stay abstinent and live in this planet and not be a crazy food addict. So thank you for letting me share.
Thank you, Beatrice O. Mia S., you're up. Bonnie G. will be next. Star 1, Mia S.
Hi, I thought I was unmuted already. Thank you. Mm-hmm. It's Mia. Mm-hmm. I'm recovering. And I was thinking about the various spiritual experiences and awakenings that I've had. And I was thinking about the day that I was going from my bedroom to the kitchen, to my bedroom, to the kitchen, to my bedroom, to the kitchen, you know, getting food each time I was going back to the kitchen. And I was living with my mother and her husband at the time, and I remember saying to my mother, "Do you see what I'm doing?" Like, you know, not that it was her responsibility or anything, but just she was there, you know, and I was like, "Do you see what I'm doing?" And I just sat down and I was like, "This is an addiction." And I had been, you know, struggling with the compulsive eating. I didn't call it compulsive eating at the time, but I had been struggling for years already, maybe 8 years. And it finally awakened in me, this is an addiction. And then I couldn't tell you how I knew about OA, but I was like, I'm going to try OA. But previous to that, And so I think I was around 25 or 24 at that point. And then, but when I was 20, I had already started having, or even before that, I had started having interest in reading about spiritual people that had lived, and then, you know, had like an awakening, the beginning of a spiritual awakening, just related to, you know, it's kind of like deeper, who am I really on a deeper level or a higher level, and what is God, and, you know, so that awakened first, but simply that did not address the issue, so of addiction. So I'm grateful for the shift, also the awakening around addiction and what the solution is. And I want to, you know, express my gratitude for this meeting that focuses on the Big Book. But I also want to express my gratitude that I came into OA, you know, in a city where apparently there's a lot of healthy meetings, because I just, every meeting I've gone to, even if there aren't always like shares that are totally focused on the solution, there's always the reading of literature and the Big Book, and, you know, I'll just finish the sentence, you know, and most of the time I'm just always hearing the message of, you know, program and recovery, and I'm so grateful for that. So thank you. I pass.
Thank you, Mia. Bonnie G. and Lynn S., we have 4 minutes before we need to close this portion of our meeting. If you would split those, that would be very nice. Bonnie G., you're first, and then Lynn S. will follow.
Hi, this is Bonnie G., in recovered in South Florida. And I just love the history. I love this forward to the second edition reveals so much that I hadn't, I was not aware of just by face-to-face OA meetings. And to understand how the 12 steps came from the 6-step program of the Oxford group, and that Ebby brought this to Bill W. And when Bill found Dr. Bob, Bob was already a member of the Oxford group. And how much of a relief that was in being able to put those things together. Although the Oxford group was a Christian movement and Bill was pretty much an atheist, that's what led to our higher power of our choice, which makes, you know, but that we have to be dependent on a power that greater than ourselves. And that is such a relief to so many people. And Bill was able to expand on these steps to make it more accessible, because he figured alcoholics needed a little bit extra explanation. And so I'm just so grateful to have learned this and to have found you guys. And thank you for the chance to share. Thank you, Melanie, as always. I pass.
Thank you very much, Bonnie G. Lynn S., it's your turn for your two.
Good morning. Thank you, Melanie. This is Lynn S., a recovered compulsive overeater in Toronto, Canada. What an amazing paragraph. And this last sentence, though he could not accept all the tenets of the Oxford groups, he was convinced of the need for moral inventory, confession of personality defects, restitution to those harmed, helpfulness to others, and the necessity of belief in and dependence upon God. Boy, I just, how you can wrap up the whole program in a sentence is amazing. I must mark that one down to be able to use it myself. But what really struck me is I can believe in God all I want. I can believe, I can believe, I can believe. It's like Tinkerbell. The difference in the program of recovery, especially for where I am now in program, is the dependence upon God. And for me now, this is a life-changing, life-altering, life-transformation activity, the dependence upon God. And I am so glad that we are where we are in the book, and that this particular three words really struck me today. And with that, I'll pass.
Thank you very much, Lynn S. It's beautiful timing. And that will wrap up the sharing portion of this particular recorded session of our meeting here today. Thank you to everyone that shared. We're going to close then out this particular recorded session by reading from the Big Book on page 164, and then we'll follow that with a Serenity Prayer. But don't go away if you're new, and all the rest, if you can stick around. After the recording has closed, we're going to meet some newcomers, get some sponsor info, and give you some announcements. So stay tuned, please, with that. So, Leslie M., would you please read page 164? A book is meant to be suggestive only.
Good morning, Melanie. Thank you for your service. This is Leslie M., a recovered compulsive overeater from Long Island, New York. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is a great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past and give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you have surely made some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.